Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankberg and Kirk Gray. I think your microphone's hot. Are you online?
Yeah, Fred. It's good to hear from you again and look forward to having another discussion.
All right. I was just looking back at some of the previous podcasts we've done, and you were the first podcast we recorded. So episode one was on that. And
When was that?
Oh, less than a year ago.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
Yeah, it was, I don't remember the exact date of that. We can probably add it to the show notes. We've come a long way, though, with the structure and format. And I know at least I've gotten more comfortable behind the microphone. But, yeah, we tried it and experimented. We're getting about 200 to 300 downloads a day. Mm-hmm. On these podcasts, where I think this podcast will be roughly the 130th, 135th episode. And we've the FMS, or not FMS, the reliability.fm, the podcast network, we added a fourth podcast to it by, having a senior moment here.
James
Kvesek, I think that's how it's pronounced.
Right, he focuses on
maintenance reliability.
Right.
And very, very practical, good stuff. And so I'm pretty happy with it. It was really done as an experiment, and I thank you, Kirk, for helping me get it started. And this show's been having fun.
Thanks for getting it together. And as I said, I've learned a lot from listening to the other podcast on the Speaking of Reliability series. Have you had much feedback on things that people want to hear, Fred, more of, or any kind of feedback?
Well, I've gotten, it's about once a week I get a message from somebody. And usually it's, thanks for sharing all the info. I like you, is enjoy listening to the shows during a commute or, things like that. Occasionally I get a question of, well, what about, I know one of them that you and I want to talk about is on mechanical systems of HALT, mechanical systems and doing HALT. We'll save that for another day. But every now and then it's the comment is, I never thought of it that way. You made me think. And I think that's a big part of why we're doing the podcast, is to help other professionals expand how they think about reliability engineering. Is a big chunk of it.
Right.
So I think there was a question about physics of failure models. There was one about the need to do an assessment. I talked to Carl about that one. We had a couple questions on supply chain type stuff. I talked to Tim on those. It's about once a week, and about once or twice a month, we get a question that makes sense to bring up in an episode.
Well, just on your first mention of the mechanical systems and HALT, just a quick plug that John
I am going to start charging John, you for these.
John Paskowitz, who is a mechanical engineer and my co-author of the book Next Generation HALT and HASS, Robust Design of Electronics and Systems. One of the reasons we put in the term systems is because John is a mechanical engineer and a certified reliability engineer, and he wanted to, and he added some good chapters on mechanical systems HALT and how to perform that. So we do address that in the book, and in case anybody's interested, that we're not just focused on solid state electronics.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, I'm sure you'll add the link to the
close of ad.
All right. But what I wanted to talk to you about, and you mentioned this, I think three, 4 weeks ago when we were recording another sessions, you were talking about pinball machines.
Right.
And you mentioned that your local arcade was, looking at it selling or closing. But you'd also talked about that you've gotten into the back of a number of these machines and
the
mix of electronics and mechanical systems and actuators and sensors. And you know, all of the bells and whistles and lighting and all that good stuff. Music, so it's got a sound system, it's got mechanical systems. Right. I think some are pneumatically powered, some are electrically powered. Well, they can get pretty complex.
Pneumatics, but there are electromechanical, you know, platforms lift. Some of these, like one, for those who out there know the history, there's one called a machine based on Doctor Who by Bally, and it's it has a little platform that lifts up and three different levels of and very, you know, they're getting very mechanically complex systems. There's a couple new companies on the market in the industry. Stern was the largest manufacturer of pinball machines now, and they've had a long history of it. There used to be a whole bunch of companies like Williams, Gottlieb, Bally, some of the Japanese companies like Data East, others that are Sega was into it, but it kind of all fell out, and pinball dropped off with the drop off of the interest in video games and online gaming and things like that. The pinball machine kind of got left a little bit to the wayside, but now I think it's having a resurgence, and you see things like the Pinball Amateur and Professional Association, which is PAPA.org, you can find all kinds of information about the pinball machines. But I find them interesting because they have everything that environmentally we test in, and that's vibration, thermal cycling. Although most of them are indoors, they still have a lot of solenoids that heat up and can be very warm. You've got a lot of shock, vibration sensors, as you've mentioned. Mm-hmm. So they really have a very kind of harsh environment, especially in just use, in the fact that some of them, like the new machines by Data E, a company called Jersey Jacks, have actually vibration, generators for the whole machine. We're actually, so in a certain condition, the machine starts to shake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have an inherent built-in
shaker table built right into the equipment.
Intended. It's intended that, like the Wizard of Oz, which is a great, wonderful, I mean, what they've done. It's basically, you can go in, and there's quite a few things on the website to show the internals of these newer machines. And in the new machines, they're basically an ATX motherboard. They're a standard PC Intel type motherboard down at the base running it now, opposed to what used to be individual logic circuits and in the older machines. And of course, before that, it was just basic electromechanicals from the 60s.
Right, just switches and so on. And
you'd be amazed how many of those are still running and still doing well after 60, 50 years of operation.
Well, there's an arcade that I took my kids to years and years ago, and it was the guy that owned Knob Hill grocery store chain here in the Bay Area, and he on the side was collecting these antique pinball games and carnival game type things, and some of those were, you know, 50, 60 years old, and they could still take a coin. And you know, in that business, it's like a slot machine at a casino. If it's down, it's not making money,
right?
And it's not providing its value. But you're right, it's got a lot of equipment, a lot of sensors and so on.
Right. And it's again, if it's down, it's not making money. But that brings up an interesting point. The people that have gotten into this field recently, I've been told by the arcade operators, we had a big pinball showdown, or they had a big 3-day conference in Denver, not conference, but a kind of an exposition where there were 30 or 40, 50 machines, pinball machines, and everybody got to play them free. But at the conference, there's a couple new manufacturers. One is called Highway Pinball, and I met Andrew Highway, and he spells it H-E-I-G-H. For Highway, W-A-Y. You can find his website. But he's building machines in England, and amazingly, because there's not a whole lot of market in Europe. But he talked about, and I was sitting there, he had two of his machines, and he was repairing one while we were, and he said, oh, it's just a sensor adjustment. I go, okay, Andrew, right. But he talked about, you know, he knew reliability was a key, and so he made his machines very modular so that you could pull out and replace solenoids and other systems in there. And I thought that was a really good idea. It made for a quick change. But at the same time, I'd say, well, you know, let's see why we need to even pull that apart.
Well, let's, it also adds another point of failure is the connector, right? The interconnect, right, and alignment, that's extra points of failure.
Yeah. But it's an interesting – he had some interesting concepts and interesting designs. Another company I heard almost sunk themselves because – and talking with – I know some arcade operators other than the one that you mentioned locally. I've kind of gotten to know some in the area. And they said, you know, they would never buy from this company again because – out of 6 months, they had it operating 3 weeks. And this was a company that was brand new to the industry and had some really innovative design and really great gameplay, you know, mechanical ramps and chutes and different functions. But if it's not reliable, you know,
it's just taking up valuable space on the floor.
Exactly, and a poor investment on their part. And but I think this company now 4 years later has obviously found their problems, which, you know, very likely I could have shown them how to find them sooner. And they have all the things built into them that I would use to test, like the shaker in the box, you know, that could shake it. I would just crank it up to levels that they would never have done in the actual end use.
But shake all those connectors loose.
Yeah, you see a lot of things, like when I repaired them, is like cold solder joints, because you've got a little wire. For instance, for most of the bumper and eject solenoids, that you've got this heavy, massive solenoid, and at the end you have a small little tab for connecting a solder to make the electrical connection with a wire. And for instance, the guy that I was working with and doing repair on had a very lightweight solder iron, and he wasn't getting the body of or the tab because it had such a heavy heat sink with the solenoid. He wasn't really getting it up to a good reflow wetting temperature, and you'd get essentially what you'd have as a cold solder joint. Well, mm-hmm. On a solenoid that's having its own generating its own very high levels of shock,
it's just going to knock those things loose. Yeah.
Exactly. You're just going to crack the solder joint. You're going to have another reliability problem. So, it may be something I'll do in the future here, even though my local arcade may be closing, is because I love the game and I love what they've done in many of the machines. But the guys that repair them may not be aware that, you know, their repairs are pretty unreliable if they're not aware of the physics of failure, you know.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And that's just one example. I'm sure that might sounds like it'd be a good paper. It's just the top 10 reliability issues with pinball machines.
Yeah, it would be, and maybe I'll have to buy one.
Now, don't tell your wife that I've,
That's another thing. They're quite pricey. They can run from a brand new one now is $9,000, you know, $700 or $6,000 to $9,000, which is a lot of money for a system. Yeah.
So, it takes a lot of quarters to fix it.
Takes a lot of quarters. Well, now it's about $1 a game, and, you know, so.
Ouch.
Yeah, but they've gotten really creative, and it's really complex, and they're using RGB LEDs, bright LEDs, and they can do some amazing patterns. No longer is it just a red light. It can be red, green, and 1,000 colors, mm-hmm, and they can mix it up. And for those who have been away from pinball like myself and only discovered it early this year, they've really developed some beautiful and fascinating things that are video games are still important, I guess. People still like those, but now they can, of course, everybody plays them on their PC or tablets. And pinball still has this real physical feel of the ball bouncing around.
If your iPad starts vibrating violently, that's probably not a good thing. But one of the things that comes out of this, though, and why I wanted to talk about it, is that reliability engineering applies to the space station, right? The Mars rover, which went way beyond its expected operating life. It applies to the vehicles, you know, airplanes, our phones, electronics, our computers, and our games.
Right.
It the same basics, you know, cold solder joint on any of those devices is bad news.
Right.
And just because it's a game niche market, it's, and I had the chance to work with the Xbox team, and I did some about a year and a half work with the accessories team that made the controllers and other accessories for the game, and they took reliability very, very seriously. You know, we often joked about, well, they're using the Microsoft method, you know, just ship it and let your customers sort it out.
But it's, was this after the painful red ring of death?
They kind of got religion all of a sudden. They got religion all of a sudden.
All you need is $1 billion event like that, where you've had to extend your warranties, and you realize that the upfront investment in prevention could really have a huge payback.
That's right, and so it's, I think, you know, the story you told about the company that almost lost it because their reliability was so bad, their availability actually was so bad, is that it doesn't really matter what the industry is. If you want it to, even if it's a one-shot device, like, you know, it has to work. And reliability is the chance that it, to some extent, it's the working with the chance that it won't work. And there's so many ways things can fail. So I think job security for us, Kirk, is pretty good. Things just keep failing and people keep ignoring it and learning it the hard way. That kind of stuff.
But prevention is a real hard sell, Fred. It is a tough one because it's investing in something that it's not supposed to happen in the future.
Well,
you like prevent that, something that's not supposed to happen if you do everything right.
That's right. And, you know, pay me now or pay me later.
Exactly.
Kind of my thought on it.
Exactly. And some people do produce a system right out the chute that's reliable, and they you know, I don't know, there's luck or things go right, but it's certainly history of that being done. But people like Microsoft that learned a very painful lesson with the red ring of death are now taking the time investing up front because it just too hard to catch up. And you know, I think that it's after the fact, it's really hard to recover from something that's hit your quality, you know, reputation.
Yeah.
And, you know, that goes on long past your next iteration of machine. And I think Xbox has been pretty reliable since the Red Ring of Death. I think that that's a fairly robust system now. And then they've got PlayStation. They've got competition. They've got the different.
Now they've got Pokemon Go. That kind of stuff. Yeah. So anyway, it's, you know, the gaming industry is more than slot machines and pinball machines. It includes these all kinds of different equipment. But whether it's a simple $2 toy at a convenience store that you pick up, or it's a space shuttle, or whatever we're using, launch vehicle of some sort.
Right.
The reliability has a role. You know, there's different constraints and controls and stuff, but a lot of what we do and learn comes from all of those. So I'm going to wrap it up here and, you know, do a plug for, if you're listening to this, you know, we're kind of went off the rails, you might have thought, talking about pinball machines, but there's still a huge reliability component in there for those business models to actually work and to meet consumer expectations that it will function for the length of the game or for the day or that kind of stuff. So, I mean, what are the other industries have you seen as a listener? Where do you work, and what maybe not so mainstream type of industry are you in, or niche industry? where reliability plays a big role. And we'd love to hear about those things and add it to the pantheon of where reliability engineers work. That might be an interesting thing to do, Kirk, is, you know, get a survey out of different types of products our audience is listening or is working on.
Sure. That would and the impact of unreliability on their product.
That's right. Yeah. So let's wrap it up there. Let us know what you think. You can find us at reliability.fm and the various shows that are in that network. Don't be shy. Let us know what you think and join the conversation. So with that, Kirk, we'll sign it off.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. It's good to talk to you again, and we'll do it again soon.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.